Hello and welcome to Charity Pulse, your bi-weekly dive into the charity sector. I'm Charles Mosquito, Charities Director at Quilter-Cheviot. I'm delighted to be joined by my co-host, Catherine Ross-Jomji, Partner and Head of Charities at Shakespeare Martineau, and James Saunders, Partner at Moore Kingston Smith. Together we explore the latest insights and pressing issues affecting charities. Don't forget, you can catch us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, as well as our websites. Now, let's get started. So I suppose the first thing that I spotted was around the Charity Governance Code, which we've obviously had a review. Catherine, probably quite good to start. I mean, I was a bit surprised that they had put out a press release without having sort of given us the report or the conclusions of their findings.
But I did wonder whether there might have been a ripple of worry about the question of charging and whether they were trying to get in front of that and say, don't panic, because it looks highly unlikely that would be introduced. So whether that got picked up in some of the questions during the consultation, I did wonder, because I think there was clearly no appetite from those responding to say they'd be happy to pay for it. So maybe, I suppose, saying something just to tease us that, you know, they've got responses and it's coming. Was it nearly 500 responses? So, you know, quite a big response rate, seems to me. It's tricky, isn't it? Because you pick out different statements from that press release. Some of it that I noticed was 93% said they found the code clear and understood what charities needed to do to implement it. So I'd almost tempted to say, well, so just stop then. Stay as you are. 93%, that's good. Why do you need to do more? But obviously they do also pick up on other areas.
What about you, James? Was there anything you picked out from that other than just the charging bit?
No, only really that, firstly, it sort of reinforces what we probably thought when we looked at this, however many months ago it was, that proposal to charge would probably be unpopular, that people were generally quite happy with the governance code. That's that 93% sort of approval rate. It's really good. The next instalment will be a lot about EDI in particular, which they say will be most challenging. Interestingly, the point about the fees, and of course what they haven't mentioned, I don't think, is that one of their other options was we will, you know, get sponsorship for this to be able to fund it. Now, they haven't mentioned that in there, I don't think. So perhaps that's how they're going to fund it if they need to resource it from somewhere, pennies-wise, cash-wise, then perhaps it is it's going with the sponsors, which I think, as we said before, they have been sponsored in previous versions, haven't they? A couple of law firms been involved and things like that.
Well, they've had a couple of worshipable companies, haven't they, have funded them. Yeah, I thought, I mean, I must admit, I mean, the charging element, they were always going to get pushback. And I have to say, some charities I'd spoken to were concerned that it was going to be a bit like the fundraising regulator, where it only goes one way. Whether that's fair or not, I don't know. I mean, EDI being the most challenging bit, I'm not sure we should be hugely surprised by that. I do worry, though, there was one comment about focus groups and tailoring the code for different sizes. I don't think it helps having two codes at the moment. I was very much hoping they were going to effectively bring them together, because if you read both codes, there is very little difference between them. And I know why they put two codes out in the first place, but I don't think there is a need for that. The only other thing I picked up on was around whether they will make the way that it's written slightly easier for people to read, in the similar vein to the Charity Commission. So do you think we should send a copy to Naomi Campbell? I noticed she was in the press.
I know, and these headline writers must love it, I just think, for all the, did she use a model constitution? Was she a model trustee? I think the answer to both of those would seem to be no, because nothing seems to have gone right. But yes, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I just think, you know, sometimes as well, people don't understand charities. And I do wonder who was advising her and whether they understood how charities should be run and the governance and what's permitted and what isn't. So,
well, we might need to explain. James, do you want to give the backstory to the Naomi Campbell?
I think she got in trouble with the Charity Commission for not spending charity funds appropriately, indeed spending charity funds very inappropriately in some cases. Not enough money went to the on the charitable objectives, and It seemed that it was there wasn't much respect for financial governance or any sort of governance in this charity. It was interesting, actually. There seemed to be a little bit of a standoff starting with the Charity Commission and our famous trustee, but actually, I think it was UNICEF that released a statement saying we've complained because she said she was raising money for us and then didn't. So it seems that it's all a bit of a mess all round. Unfortunately, it does show this. There are a lot of, reasonably high profile founder charities around now. I mean, a lot of the footballers, for example, do start these foundations, don't they? And my experience of them is they've been very, very well intentioned and generally well run, not quite very well run, but well run because they get the right professional advisors in place. This one, I'm afraid, does seem like it's they haven't had the right people in place, and there hasn't been enough challenge and skepticism, and overall governance.
I think for all three of the trustees to be disqualified was quite a biggie, wasn't it? Sometimes you would see, one or two that were the naughty ones or the ones that weren't pulling their weight. But I think for all three to be disqualified was, quite telling.
Well, and the Charity Commission doesn't use that power lightly. So I think that probably says all that it needs to do. The other thing I spotted was Brooke moving to a 4-day week, and I wonder what you both thought about that. And also, we might not that they talked about hybrid working, but might sort of link that into hybrid working now that we're sort of 4 years on from COVID, or 3 years on from COVID. Catherine, why don't you start?
Sure. Interesting, because I think the way it's been described by Brooke, that the I suppose the focus point of why they've done this is for the well-being of their staff. And I just kind of was reading it, and I don't know if it's just the article, but it just seemed to focus almost too much on the well-being of the staff. And I was immediately thinking, well, what about the well-being of users of that charity? Are they still getting the best service? Are their needs still being met? Because it does seem that they have moved to a 4-day week, no reduction in pay for employees. And yes, the employees like that. But I just wasn't convinced, is that the way to go? And is it something that all charities, any other charities could do? And I think hybrid working is a slightly different element, isn't it? I think post-COVID we saw that where many charities, decided no longer to have their headquarters in London, for instance, and they didn't need to have a physical premises all of the time. They work in different ways, which to me seemed to be adjusting to a changing world, whereas this seemed, wow, it's quite a headline, isn't it, to think you'd get the same pay but only come in 4 days, not five.
James, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, there's the 4-day week campaign, which was quoted on this particular matter. I mean, I think it's great. I think it's very commendable. For some, this is the key, isn't it? For some organizations it works, for some roles it works, for some people it works. Personally, from a purely personal point of view, I don't want to work 4 days a week. I want to work 5 days a week. But I mean, if some people want it differently and it can work for an organization, that's absolutely fine. I don't see how it could work for my role personally. I'm sure it can for some and several. The worrying bit for me is the evangelical element to it. It's that this is what everyone should be doing, which that's the worry really, is that it becomes something that is, people are judged badly on, judged aggressively on. When really what you want is what's right for, the people in the business, the organization, whatever it is, and what's right for, importantly, as Catherine said, for the beneficiaries of a charity, which is what the charity is set up for. The charity is not set up fundamentally for the staff, it's set up for the beneficiaries. If the staff, are happy, great, you're a good employer. But don't forget, your core objectives are not to run a good charity, your core objectives are to support your beneficiaries.
Yeah, I mean, we've had lots of press comment around the funding crisis in the charity sector, haven't we? And this sort of seems to be bucking the trend that they can afford to go from a 5 to 4 day week, which I assume is they're going to have equal productivity. But I agree with you. I think it's I think it would be, I think most organisations that I know and involved with, I think they would struggle to have a 4-day week.
And Charles, this does tie in as well. I know I pointed out to you, didn't I, about the story about the couple of grant makers who've signalled that they're really struggling at the moment.
Yeah.
Do you want to pick that up?
Yeah, no, go for it. Go for it.
That's just, I mean, City Bridge Foundation and the Schroeder Charitable Trust both said they're pausing taking applications at the moment. And I still, it caught my eye because this is kind of where we thought, you know, people would be about now. After COVID, we did say that all the indicators were the trusts and foundations would be filling the hole from government funding, which, you know, it's clearly come through. And I see this day in, day out when I talk to clients. Because of growing demand, you know, overwhelmed, I think one of them says overwhelmed by applications, you know, some of which are genuine, you know, good applications, some of which I think, Catherine, you were saying earlier, some of them, you know, it's a bit of a mixed bag on applications. But if people are applying for or making applications that aren't relevant to the grant maker, then obviously there's an element of desperation on their side as well. So it does seem to be all coming to pass. What we figured, you know, a couple of years ago, the trusts and foundations are the ones that are really being leaned on now in the absence of wider funding.
Catherine?
Yeah, I think it is that point, isn't it? I think there is greater interest, possibly greater demand. But I think some of them, and again, maybe it's just the reporting of it, but I think some, they weren't being clear about what it was they would actually support. And therefore, if in doubt, you would chuck in an application for grant funding because you're desperate and why wouldn't you give it a try? And I think it seems to me that there has been a massive increase in the volume of applications and that not all of them are suitable. But I think that's also where grant funders need to be clearer about this is what we will fund and this is what we won't, so that you're not wasting people's time applying for something that they're not eligible for.
Yeah, I mean, you talk to somebody like James Brooke Turner, he'll tell you that the foundations have done very well from an investment point of view, and their, you know, their total pots have grown. So whether there is less money to give out having spent more, I'm not quite so sure. I certainly know from RL Glasspool, where we have completely changed the way that we're doing our grant funding, because having moved from a paper base to a online, and we had been very clear about what we did fund on the online bid. I think it was about a 95% acceptance rate. So that wasn't the problem. But we got to such a stage where we were opening it up on a Monday morning and after closing it three minutes later because we were inundated with applications. So we've just completely changed the way we're actually giving out money by, we've gone out and done a big job of selecting a number of preferred providers that we're going to give them lumps of money each year, and we've been dealing with them historically. So I think we've got about just short of 50 of them, and then they're going to distribute the money and then tell us how they've actually spent it. So that what that will do is save them from having to waste their time putting in an application to us. But actually we haven't stopped giving out grants. We've just organize the transition so that one year we were had it on the online, and then next year, which is this year, we're in our first year of giving out lumps of money. I think people are just going to have to think differently about the way they do stuff.
Yeah,
would be certainly my view. So what else have we had on there? There was a covenant agreement between charities and government to be launched in the new year. I don't know if you guys had any thoughts on that.
James? Apparently it was Sue Gray, wasn't it? So that's gone for Burton now. She's gone. it's promising, isn't it? It's it kind of follows on from the positive government noises that there were as when it was the Labour Party government elect pre-election. Everyone seems to be quite positive. Let's hope it actually delivers something.
It did make me laugh, though. Covenant. I thought, oh, we're trying to get as close as we can to the word compact that some people just cannot let go of. I was kind of to call it something else. So all this harping back to it will be as good as the compact. The compact was never legally binding in the first place. I don't know why it's being held up as the, exemplar. This is what we need to get back to. That didn't work. I think, fine, this sounds good, but let's not, feel like we're going back in time.
Yeah, I have to say it was under Tony Blair and Gordon Brown, wasn't it? And they spent quite a lot of money, and I do slightly wonder about how much of that money, from an impact point of view, was well spent. I don't wish to be critical on that. However, I think anything that changes the relationship between the sector and government has got to be a good thing. Although I did notice that there was a session where charities, there was a number of people on a at a conference saying that charity leaders were told to avoid being co-opted by the Labour government, so and that it shouldn't be too cozy a relationship. And the final thing, just I spotted, I don't know if you guys have a view on, is about charitable giving from the 100 largest UK charities has fallen by 34% in real terms over the last decade. Despite the combined profits increasing by 49%. There we are. Who'd like to kick off first on that one?
Oh, was that of corporates, Charles, wasn't it?
That's
Giving
corporates, yeah, companies,
corporates,
UK companies, PLCs.
I suppose it is that gap in expectations of, you can't just expect it if you're not putting out, why are you a worthy recipient for it? What's in it for the corporates? And I just think sometimes this corporates versus charities is not helpful. We're all in the same world, and there's challenges for corporates as well. So I don't think it's necessarily that surprising that they wouldn't necessarily be tripping over themselves. We might get another silly headline, though, like we did in a previous article, where they could give more. And you think, yeah, but they could if they wanted to. But yeah.
Because the numbers, I think, is that they give about 1.82 billion a year, but actually, if it had risen at the same rate as the profits, it would be 3.1 billion a year. James, what
But
do you think?
it is strange. I think it is strange, if I'm reading this right, that the donations decreased. You'd have thought they'd have at least stayed the same. I mean, I presume that means decreased in real, it's a bit disappointing, really. I think that I think we could, as a society, look at that and go, that's pretty disappointing. But we haven't, it's not even increased nicely. It's actually decreased.
But I'm not sure. I'm not sure we should be expecting companies to be giving money. That's not what they're there for.
No, but
There's
it's become more and more. Fashionable is not the right word, but it's become more and more part and parcel. I mean, my firm now has a separate charity. We've got a foundation which we match fund for, and all our staff raise funds for. We just purely in isolation, we do quite a lot more. I would have thought a lot more. Now, okay, this is only the FTSE 100 companies. But I mean, you'd have thought they would have been moving with the times and would have been had more on all the ESG, and particularly the social side of things, the social commitment. You'd have thought there'd have been more going back into society.
Yeah, I as I said, I think because publicly quoted companies are looking at what they're aiming to do, I sometimes think we shouldn't necessarily expect, or if there's a reason to do it from their behalf. I mean, we're like you, we also have a charitable foundation, and it is very much so there to help our staff on their sort of volunteering journey and being able to match fund. But
But
it's not
Charles,
a main part of the business.
I mean, your firm, they have ethical funds these days, don't they? Ethical investment funds, where 10 years ago they would have been in their infancy. These should be well developed, or I'm sure they are well developed now. There's every opportunity for companies and individuals to be doing much, much more these days.
I mean, I suspect companies will say they pay their taxes, etc., and their job is to get on and do the business there. What do you think, Catherine?
I think that's exactly the point. I find the same when we complain that, wealthy people are not giving to charity. I think it's not. And then sometimes the assumption, isn't it? Oh, it's because corporates are not paying their tax and individuals are not paying their tax. And I think that's just the wrong focal point. I think, when we pay into government to cover some of these core services, then that is where the pressure should be, not looking at corporates. And I think the follow-on that you'd spotted, Charles, was of 650 MPs in the UK Parliament, how many donate to charity through Givers You Earn? And the answer is 7, down from 13. So that's also going down. I mean, I wickedly thought it's because they didn't want the abbreviation GAY on their bank statements, because I think there's an element of homophobia across there, that GAYE does not go down well in case it looks like a nightclub. But yeah, who knows what's going on with that?
Something to discuss at a later date, I think. I think at that point we'll call this to a close. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Charity Pulse. We hope you found our discussion insightful. If you have any questions or topics you would like us to cover in the future, we would love to hear from you. Don't forget to follow us, leave a review, share our podcast with your network. Join us next time as we continue to explore the challenges and opportunities facing the sector. Until then, keep the pulse of the charity beating strong.